Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, executive editor.
Hi, everyone.
Well, Mara, summer is right around the corner, and we have the exclusive preview of what's ahead on Young and the Restless. So look for Victor to take charge when he worries that Victoria's trust in Nate is at the expense of what's best for Newman Enterprises. We're going to see Sharon's past catch up with her in the form of Cameron Kirsten, and Nick will jump to her rescue. Now, Kyle and Summer will have big trouble thanks to the antics of Diane and Phyllis. Tucker's presence intensifies the rift between Jack and Ashley, which I am so loving. Chance will surprise Devon and Abby with a big decision. Phyllis will work to repair the damage created from her alliance with Jeremy. And love is in the air for Billy and Chelsea, Tessa and Mariah, who will adjust to motherhood, and Lily, who will provide Daniel with some much-needed TLC.
Well, it definitely sounds like we are in store for a juicy summer season on YNR, and I think it is shaping up to be just that on GH as well. Case in point, the Metro Court pool reopens for the summer next week, and I can confirm that fans will be seeing several of their favorites without a shirt on, as many chiseled Port Charles residents will take advantage of this fact. Also upping the heat quotient is the news that Gavin Houston is returning as Portia's brother Zeke. So Gavin first played Zeke back in February when he attended his sister's wedding to Curtis. And I saw a lot of positive response to him on social media and, you know, completely saw why. And he was also really well liked behind the scenes. So when Zeke comes back to Port Charles soon, expect him to stay a while and don't expect him to stay drama free for very long. Now, GH fans will also be seeing Charles Shaughnessy again. He reprises Victor, but only briefly in scenes tied to the reading of Victor's will, which will also air next week. And the consequences of his bequeathals will be felt by many characters, both short-term and long-term. But beginning with short-term, not unlike YNR Sharon, Anna's past will catch up with her, and we will see her in handcuffs. But you will have to tune in to find out why.
Ooh, that's a very good cliffhanger, Mara. So we're going to see some returns over on Days of Our Lives. Lindsay Godfrey will be back as Sarah, whose pregnancy is now quite advanced, as well as Kyle Lauder as Rex, who is with Sarah in Chicago. They will get a very interesting visit from Bonnie, who will obviously leave with a lot of information. Also on the casting front, veteran sitcom actress Kim Coles has joined Days in the new role of a nurse, Nurse Whitley. So you'll have to tune in there to see who she crosses paths with. Over at B&B, Taylor is going to make a pretty aggressive move when she urges Deacon to pursue Brooke again. I mean, this sounds like it is in direct violation of Taylor and Brooke's Sisters Before Misters Pact. And since we're already seeing some tension between the new besties over Thomas, I have a feeling that this will play out in a very dramatic way. So we know the show just wrapped some on-location filming in Rome. There was what I assume to be leaked footage of Brooke and Ridge kissing. So we will see how it all unfolds. And selfishly, I'm just kind of excited to take a virtual jaunt to Europe soon.
Oh, you're so right. You know, B&B always crushes those trips abroad. I mean, they are second to none when it comes to shooting internationally and really conveying a sense of luxury and the beauty of the cities that they visit. As someone with one lonely stamp on my passport, I am really looking forward to the vicarious sightseeing. I was like drooling over the pictures that the actors were posting on social media, and it really got me excited to see the footage when it airs.
Oh, I'm confident it will be can't miss. I also love their international trips, if you will. Something else to note in our new issue, I spoke to Daisy's Deidre Hall, who recently marked 5,000 episodes as Dr. Marlena Evans. So she and I took a little walk down memory lane, and she looked back on some of the moments and the men that shaped Marlena's life and shared some stories I hadn't heard before. So congratulations to Deidre on such an amazing milestone. And any Marlena fans listening should for sure check it out. Now, our guest today is no stranger to daytime. It's Lyndon Ashby, who started his soap career on Loving, but is reprising the role of YNR's dastardly Cameron. So let's check in with him and see how his Genoa City comeback came about. Hi, Lyndon.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good. You?
Good. Well, we are thrilled you could join us today. We are also thrilled you'll be returning to Young and the Restless. But before we get there, we are going to go back in time a little. You were born into a decidedly non-showbiz family in Atlantic Beach, Florida. Tell us how you first became interested in acting and performing.
It's true. I was born in a little town in Northeast Florida, a little beach town, right near Jacksonville. And nobody in my family was an actor. My great-grandfather was a minister. So maybe that's kind of like being an actor, I guess. And then my grandfather was a lawyer, but no show business. They were like, cool, dude. Yeah, go do that. And they were like, he'll be home soon. but it was good. I don't know. I did one play in high school. I wasn't like a high school theater person. And then I went to university, went to college, and I didn't study acting. I was doing business and psychology, a split major, but I kind of lucked in. I went to a little school in Colorado called Fort Lewis College, which is a branch of Colorado State. And in this little school at this particular time, they had this kind of amazing, these people in the theater department. And I just lucked into it, and I started doing plays, and pretty soon kind of realized that I thought I was pretty good at it. But what I really knew is that this is all I wanted to do. I wanted to be an actor. And I think I was young enough and dumb enough that you don't realize how crazy that is. But I did it. And then to make parents even happier, I dropped out of college and moved to New York after my junior year of college. I moved to New York and I studied at a place called the Neighborhood Playhouse with a guy named Sandy Meisner. And I was lucky enough to study with Mr. Meisner, and he was amazing. And the whole program was amazing. It was a 2-year program. And it was sort of like my favorite actors, you know, worked with him. You know, and I was like, okay, this is cool. And I'll never forget doing this interview with him. And he's like, he goes, I'm not interested in what you've done. You know, I'm not interested in what you did at college. I'm not interested in any of that. He's like, I want people who don't want to be actors. I want people who have to be actors. And, you know, and I guess at that point in my life, I fit that bill. And it was an amazing 2 years. And then I got out, I graduated and got an agent. I got one. And then I started doing theater in New York, and I was doing like, you know, off Broadway, off Broadway, regional theater, knocking around I did two commercials. That's all I've ever done in my life. And I was a bartender, and then I got on Loving. Before that, I don't know. I got on one. God, I can't remember what it was. I did a couple days on it, or you know, a bit, you know, like 2 or 3 days, something like that. On the girl I worked with, her character's name was Mindy,
and
Guiding Light. I did Guiding Light, and it helped me pay for my motorcycle. So that motorcycle was named Mindy. And then I got on Loving, and then I did a bit part on like a day on Loving, and I met this actress, Susan Walters, because we were working together, and it was Susan and I was with a guy named John Nelson, and there's a girl, I think, I'm going to get it wrong. Anyway, we all went to lunch, and it was like, you know, I'm looking at this really pretty girl and I'm thinking, oh my God, you know, I'm whatever. And I was dating somebody else and so I'm too cool and I'm, you know, smoking cigarettes and hanging out and being very accurate. And then she came with John to a party at my apartment and I was with somebody else. And so we didn't, you know, nothing happened. But apparently in that morning when we went to her, we were at rehearsal, and then she walked out of that rehearsal and went into the makeup room, and the makeup artist Bernadette, and she sat down in Bernadette's chair and she goes, I'm going to marry that guy. Not like a romantic thing, more like it's just going to happen. And God bless her. you know, it's like, it worked out pretty great, actually. But what are the odds? And so then I went on Loving full time.
I want to hear how you actually, like, what do you remember about getting the job on Loving? What the casting process was like?
I got on Loving, and the casting process was I went in and I did a couple auditions, and then I did the final, you know, like going to network sort of, you know, the screen test and all that. And a guy named Joe Stewart was producing it at that point. And he gave me the job, and I think he probably regretted it pretty soon. I got the job, and it was cool. It was, you know, this is what I miss so much, is that, you know, there used to be so many soaps, and it was a place where young actors started. Everybody was doing soaps at that point. I mean, you know, Meg Ryan and Kevin Bacon and Alec Baldwin and everybody, we all started in soaps. Julie Bowen was on Loving and Luke Perry was on Loving. And, you know, and the list goes, Edie Falco. It's like everybody, like, you can make a living, you know, doing this. And you learned how to work in front of a camera, and you learned to learn lines, and you learned how to work. And I was young. And so it's like at the same time I was doing the soap in the daytime, I did theater at night. I can't imagine doing that now. But I had a lot of energy. And so there was this actress that I had just, like, you know, thought she was pretty amazing the first time I met her. And I got back on the show, and we, unbeknownst to us, we were in like an acting class together. I had just broken up with somebody, and I asked Susan out, and we went out on our first date. I think I honest to God forgot my wallet. Yeah. And she was like, great. And so that was our first date. And we went out for about 3 months. And I asked her to marry me. And we got married less than 3 months later. She was maybe 21 or 22. She was 22 and I was 25. And the odds of that working are 1,000,000 to 1. And, you know, because we just, I don't know, we loved each other. And, you know, people grow at such different rates and at different times in their lives. And I think women go through, you know, this crazy growth spurt at around in their late 20s, early 30s. And they, you know, not like a growth spurt, but, you know, but developmentally, mentally, you know, emotionally. And then men go through it at a different time. Then women go through a different thing. And we go through these changes, and we went through all those together. And then we had kids together, and we never stopped loving each other, you know, and it's not always easy. And, you know, there's good times and there's bad times, and but the good times far outweighed the bad times. It's easier to remember the bad times because they're kind of profound, but the good times are, I don't know. I can't imagine. I remember a few years ago, just that moment when you wake up and you go, I can't imagine life without her. And that's it's weird and kind of scary and kind of great. But yeah, it worked. We got lucky.
Well, I have to say, off the top of my head, you are statistically one of the only couples I could really think of that, or one of the only couples that met on soaps and stayed married as long as you have. So there is, right in there.
Yeah.
Bill and Susan Hayes have you beat, but you know,
did Cranston meet Robin on a soap, or was that, did they meet?
I think they met when he was on the soap, but I don't think they properly met, like doing it together, if you will.
Yeah. 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 And Susan and I played cousins, which added a whole another creepy element to it. but I don't know.
Besides Susan, you know, who do you remember being buddies with in the cast? I imagine you were all sort of a little gang of, you know, actors hanging out.
We were. I mean, Perry, Brian O'Hurley, you know, and John O'Hurley and Brian and John Johnson. And I was good friends with Grant Show because he shot next door and did Ryan's Hope. So I knew Grant and Callan White and Noel, and I'm sure I'm missing somebody, Judith Hogue and Roya. And, you know, it was a great place to be. And we were all kind of, and I loved Wesley and I loved Jane Powell and Augusta and Celeste and these older actors that were just, you know, so lucky to have them there. But like I say, it was where you started, and and there are people who stayed and had these amazing careers, and there are people who left. And it's funny because I talk about Luke Perry. I was a cautionary tale that Joe Stewart told to Luke when Luke was acting up. He's like, there was this other actor and he was very talented, but he was very bad attitude. And I did have a bad attitude. And I did, you know, but this guy was not a nice guy. Joe Stewart did a lot of damage to a lot of people. God rest his soul, right? But he was abusive. He had issues. He had problems. Not a fun place to work with him. And I, you know, I'd just push his buttons. You know, I'd be like... I'm like, come on, asshole, throw a punch. And he didn't respond well, and he didn't respond well when I married Susan. I think he had, you know, anyway, Joe Stewart was not a great guy. And so I was a cautionary tale for Luke. And so Luke and I met after, because Luke was on after me. And so we met and we were friends because he was like, dude, you were my you know, my role model, in way. And then I remember when he came out, you know, he was in Hollywood and he got 90210. He got this show and he called me, he goes, hey, you know, let's get a bite to eat. And so we went, we had breakfast, and he's like, Lyndon, he goes, they want to fire me. He goes, Fox doesn't like me. The network doesn't like me. And he goes, and Aaron is the only one who's in my corner. And Spelling, Mr. Spelling went to bat for Luke, and they wouldn't let him, they would not let them fire him because they're like, they don't like the way I look. They don't think I'm going to, like, whatever. And Aaron was right. And then Luke, God, he was such a good guy. He was a really good person. And I remember we did 8 Seconds together, which was this rodeo movie. And I think Luke probably helped me get the part. And that was with John, a director named John Alphonson, who was a very successful film director. And then I got an audition for this other movie called Wyatt Earp. And John went out of his way to help me out. He, you know, called Lawrence Kasdan. He sent footage from the film before it was released. And I got that part on Wyatt Earp, and that was sort of this huge movie that kind of changed my life. It's the only movie I wish that I could go back and do again, because it was, I think I was just scared and nervous the whole time. And now I'd be back and be like, this is great. but at the time I think I was kind of intimidated, and I shouldn't have been, but I was. Oh, well. So yeah, I jumped all over the place there.
Well, so you left when you left Loving.
Yeah. I got fired.
When you got fired from Love
It, I got fired.
Bad attitude and your Susan Walters marriage.
Yeah.
When you got fired from Loving, was it immediate to you that you wanted to give LA a try? Like,
no, we were living in New York. We were in New York, and then I don't know when I got fired, but hung out in New York for a bit. And then you used to go to LA for pilot season. And so Susan had gotten off the soap and she had done this movie called Ruskies. And then I don't know if she had done a pilot or not, but we're like, let's go out to LA for pilot season. Let's give it a shot. And so we kept our apartment in New York, you know, we sublet it and we packed up, bought a Jeep, and we headed to California in January in a Jeep. And it was like the whole way across the country. Pulling a trailer. And we got there, and I had a good friend whose mom lived in Beverly Hills, and she was amazing. Inger Ostera, and she let us stay in her guest house for a month or so. And it was like this, I think it was John Barrymore's old house. And so it was up in the hills, and this guest house was the old screening room. And you had these French doors that just looked over Los Angeles. And I'm like, hey, this LA place is pretty good. and I was there for, I think, a couple weeks, a few weeks, and got a job on this miniseries called Poor Little Rich Girl with Farrah Fawcett.
Tell us about working with her on that miniseries.
She was amazing. It was a great intro to Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I was freaking green. I remember my first scene on this was I'm eating breakfast with my mom. I dive in the pool, swim across the pool, pop out, start eating. And they're like, okay, rolling. And I dove in the pool and swam across and popped out and did the scene. And the director was like, well, that was very good. He goes, next time, he goes, you know, maybe wait for action. I'm like, oh, right. You know, because on a soap, they count you down. You know, it's like they go 5-4 and off you go. And so they said rolling. I figured, well, the cameras are going, I might as well go. But that was really good. And then I started doing, you know, like I was working, like I said, but I wasn't making a ton of money. And Susan's career was like taking off. And it was this kind of weird dynamic in our relationship, which at the time was hard for me and probably hard for her. And, you know, full of testosterone and, you know, just like the angriest dog in the world. Pretty boring in hindsight, but, you know, we are what we are. And so we made it through that. And then Susan got pregnant with Grace. And that was an absolute accident. And we were going somewhere for the weekend. We were going to Telluride, actually. And then she still didn't feel great. You know, she did everything wrong. I mean, she had like this lump in her stomach and cramping, and she went and got Rolfed in like the, you know, the gut. She stuck her gut up against a jacuzzi jet and all this. And then she finally said, look, can you feel this, Lyndon? And I'm like, yeah, you know. And she goes, I think I have like a tumor or a cyst or something. And I'm like, well, I don't, you know, Dr. Ashby, I'm like, I don't know what to do about that. In hindsight, I probably had some great advice to give, like go to the doctor. I don't know. And she went to the doctor, and she was 4 months pregnant. And
wow.
You know, and then there was this whole thing of like, she wasn't supposed to be able to get pregnant. That's why she was going on birth control to kickstart her system. And then she got pregnant. And then there was this whole risk of being pregnant while you're on birth control. And so I had to do a bunch of tests for that. And everything turned out great. And then she started having early labor and contractions, had to be on bed rest and low amniotic fluid and this whole thing. And that's why Grace is named Grace, because by the grace of God, she's here and she's healthy and amazing. But it was touch and go. And So we got Grace, and then I think at that, right around then is when my career kind of started popping in movies. And I had this kind of great run for, you know, it was like, you know, 8 Seconds and Wyatt Earp and Mortal Kombat, and then, you know, these films, and then did series. And then I just finished up this series for ABC called Spy Game, which was, I loved, but it didn't, you know, it was 13 and done. And so I went on a surf trip to Costa Rica, and I think this is 1990, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, somewhere in there. And I had a cell phone, but it didn't work in Costa Rica. And we're way in the middle of nowhere. We're down in southern Costa Rica, and there's no real communication. And you know, Susan knew where I was, and I come back, I get back in town. And I mean, we didn't even have email, right? There was no email. There was, so I probably talked to her on the phone at some point, or maybe not, who knows? But I came home, and I get off the plane, and my agent's like, dude, what the hell? he goes, they've been calling on Melrose Place. They wanted you to do this part. And I'm like, okay, well, what? Anyway, long story short, by being out of town, being out of communication, the offer just got better and better and better and better and better and better. It was the best negotiating I've ever done, because they'd be like, will he do the part? And my manager's like, I don't know.
He's really hard to get.
He's in Costa Rica. He's on a surf trip. I don't know. And they're like, will he do it for this much? I don't know. Will he do it for this much? And by the time I got off the plane, I had this amazing deal that was really too good to say no to, because I, between you, me, and the wall, I wasn't that interested in doing Melrose Place. Susan watched it and she liked it, and I was like, nah. But I did it, and it was so funny, because I don't think I was very good on it. I remember just thinking, these are conversations I would never have. Either I'd say, we're not having this conversation, or I'd be like, let's go. But we're not two guys going to talk about all this stuff. I'm like, so I did Melrose Place, and I don't know if I was any good at it, and did, you know, I don't know how many episodes, 35, 40, something in there. And did it and got off, and then did more stuff and more series. And then I hit my 40s, I guess. We've jumped through the 30s and gone to the 40s. 30s were great career-wise, amazing.
Okay, 40s. But we got to stop you on the 30s.
Okay, go ahead.
We were going to stop you for a Melrose Place question.
You were on the show from 1997 to 1998, and you were busy. You played Coop Cooper, a surgeon and prolific ladies' man.
Yes.
And he was, romance-wise, involved with Jamie Lunar, Kelly Rutherford, and Marsha Cross.
I know.
Pretty nifty leading ladies there. So what stands out about, you know, working with them?
I loved all of them. And they're such different people, you know. Marsha, I didn't work with a ton. And then I think, like, I was on it before, and I worked with Daphne Zuniga as well. And then Jamie and Kelly, they were great. You know, they're amazing. It was such an eye opening kind of thing to walk into this, to come off a show where, you know, you're like number one on the call sheet, right? To walk into Melrose Place that they've been going for 5 years, and they are a well oiled machine, and it's an ensemble cast, and they've all been there, and you're sort of this new guy coming in. And it was different. And they did 32 shows a season, you know, so you'd be doubling up, and you'd, you know, be doing two shows at once, overlap shows, and it was great. And everyone actually, they couldn't have been nicer. I mean, they really couldn't. And it was a fun cast, you know. It was, I mean, Thomas Calabro, I liked a lot, and Kelly and Jamie, and everybody was really cool. It was cool.
Well, I will say you do hold a distinction in the like trivia of Melrose Place that you are one of two regular characters who were straight males who were never romantically involved with Amanda Woodward, aka Heather.
I Longwood. Know, right?
So were you bummed? Were you aware of that? Did you want an Amanda romance?
Hell yeah. I think Rob was pretty busy with her. and another nice person. And no, yeah, I didn't. Did not. But she, Heather was great. I mean, Heather was such like down to business, kind of like no nonsense, super nice, no drama at all. And kind of inspirational, you know, in a way, sort of a blueprint. And I think that there have been hard times since then. And I don't really know her well enough to kind of reach out in any way, shape or form. But certainly liked what I knew and wish her all the best. It's hard life. It's hard business. And I think it's harder for actresses. I mean, it just is. And it's, I don't know. It's, I think it's, you know, they say, oh, well, men age. Well, no, we have our, you know, better or whatever, but we have our, it's not easy for anybody getting old. But it's, I think it's really hard for women and beautiful women. I mean, you have a superpower when, you know, a beautiful young woman has a superpower. And it's, we all experience that moment in life when you could become sort of invisible, and you know, you feel young inside still, and then people are not, you're not even blipping on the radar, and it's hard. It's a hard, weird transition. But if you can go through that, there's a superpower that waits on the other side, and that superpower is freedom. You know, it's I'm better at what I do now than I've ever been in my life. And I'm more comfortable in my own skin than I've ever been in my life. And I don't have to prove anything to anybody. And if I can go home at night and I'm proud of the way I behave during the day or what I accomplished, and my head hits a pillow and I'm okay. And you don't necessarily have that as a young person. You got other things, but it's a trade-off. Yeah.
That's interesting. So it was in 2003 that YNR fans first got to know you as Mr. Cameron. So obviously your wife, Susan, had her affiliation with YNR prior that. But tell us about how you first came to join YNR and how the gig came about.
I was, Susan was on it and I knew everybody involved. You know, she'd been on it for a couple of years. And I was in South Africa doing a movie and I came back and they're like, hey, will you come do this like 13 show arc? And I'm like, well, what, do I get to work with Susan? They're like, yes, we'll make sure you get to work with Susan. I'm like, sure, I'll do it. Why not? And I did it. And then they really liked it. And so they kind of brought the character back from the dead and had just added to it. And I love working with Sharon. I love working with Josh and everybody. And I did get to work a little bit with Susan, but it was mostly with Sharon. And Sharon, we click, you know. I like her. She's such this individual. She's so like, you know, I just like her. I guess I don't need to explain why. I just like her and I like working with her. And so Cameron got thrown out of an airplane, parachuted into a cornfield and then got arrested. You know, it happens. And so then I just kind of, I think it went off and was doing other stuff. And then then this little, I guess, God, we moved to Georgia because the girls were in high school. And Susan's like, I don't want the girls to go to high school in LA. And I'm like, all right. And she's like, if you give me this time in Georgia with my parents and my family, and you know, I grew up in North Florida, so it was pretty close to that. And if you give me this time, you know, we can live anywhere in the world you want to live after that. And I never wanted to overstay my welcome at the party. I'd had a really good run and I didn't want to be that guy sitting in the hallway with, you know, reading for Murder, She Wrote. So we moved to Georgia and I thought, I'm going to go do something else. You know, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to go do something else. And I thought about, there was a bookstore that I loved in this town that I grew up in. And I thought about buying that bookstore and went very far down the road to buying that bookstore. And for a couple of different reasons, it didn't work out. And so I moved to Georgia. We moved to Georgia for these reasons and thought, well, maybe I'm done with acting. And then like the whole industry came to Georgia. And so, but what's funny is, so I had not physically done a production in Los Angeles in probably 5 years. You know, everything I did, I'd be in Romania or Yugoslavia or the Czech, you know, Budapest or Bucharest or, you know, it's somewhere, South Africa, you name it, all like Canada, everywhere, shooting everywhere. We moved to Georgia. The first year we're in Georgia, I did 3 films in L.A. And then weird coincidence, Ed Scott called and said, will you come on Days of Our Lives and do this character? And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? And so I did it. And that was a totally great experience. I love Ed. It was a weird, I wasn't prepared for that. I mean, nothing bad at all. I don't know. It was fine. It was great. Well, nothing bad. All good. And so then I went back to Georgia and then jumped on this show called The Gates, which was a great premise. You know, this gated community for supernatural creatures. And I did, I don't know how many, like 5 or whatever out of 13, 6 or whatever. I can't remember the number. And that ended. And then Susan got on Vampire Diaries. And then this little show called Teen Wolf came along. And I sent in an audition, you know, that I had to audition for it. And I sent my tape in. And they're like, hey, we want to do a callback. And I was out of town. I was doing something. And I was like, yeah, no, I can't. I can't do it. And Jeff Davis, who was a writer, producer on the show, was like, we don't need to see a callback. Give him the part. And he's like, oh, my God, I had no idea you lived here. And so I got on that show and we shot the first 2 seasons in Atlanta and then relocated back to LA because the show came back out to LA. And so I don't know when we came here, probably came back 2012, 2013, somewhere in there in that nape of the woods, whatever that is. And that's been it. And so here, and then got off Teen Wolf and did a YouTube series and got off the YouTube series and did a show for Netflix called Trinkets for a couple years.
Teen Wolf was like a cult sensation, you know? So yeah. Were you aware of that when you were on it, that suddenly the show was really very popular?
It was crazy because I did the table read, right? For the pilot. And it was these 2 young actors, these 3 young actors. And I was like, first of all, I got this script for Teen Wolf. Right. And I went, oh, really? Teen Wolf? We're going to make a series out of that. And I read the script and it was actually great. And then Dylan and Tyler and Crystal and Holland and, you know, and Jeff and we started shooting this show. We got picked up to go to series and we started shooting this thing because we had just done a presentation, you know, and then we got picked up and I was like, this is really good. And Russell directing it was really good. And it's funny because I had worked with Russell before, Russell Mulcahy, who was director of the whole first season. And I had worked with him on Resident Evil, a movie and that we shot together. And so I knew him, and I knew how good it was, but you never know how, if it's going to hit. And then it premiered, and then it became this thing that it was a really good show. I mean, it was actually a really good show. And it's this, and what I loved about it, it's a show that really kind of says, hey, you're okay. You know, we're all weird. None of us, you know, it's like it normalized, you know, like the way it treated being gay. It was like, it's a young person in love. Doesn't matter who they're in love with. And it was fun, and it was good, and it was funny, and it was hard. It had heart, and it's a friendship story. I mean, it's these two kids that are best friends, and it's sort of coming of age, and it just worked, you know, it just freaking worked. And Dylan was magical. O'Brien, he was something special. And it was a really interesting thing to watch those kids go from, I think, you know, it was Dylan's first job, to go from that to being like so famous. It's heady stuff, and it's hard to deal with. And they did amazingly well. And
did you work with Shelley Hennig, who played Stephanie? Yeah,
of course I worked with Shelley Hennig. I love Shelley. Shelley is, I don't know what the, you know, she's, if we're going back to like the 30s or something, Shelley's a dame, you know, she's a dame. She's so funny. She's so smart and salty and no nonsense and funny as just, she's funny. And I love working at, you know, with her, and I love hanging out with her, and JR and Ian and, you know, the whole cast. It's like we it's so lame to go, we were like a family, but we were like a family. And we still are in a weird way. And I think that it's this little show that no one thought was going to be what it was. And it's this little show that went out in the world and connected with people in sometimes really profound ways. And then it came back, you know, they loved it, and that love came back, and then it bounced back and back and forth, this energy that went back and forth between us and our fans or whatever, and these people that we connected to. And it every time that bounce happened, I think it multiplied. If that sounds weird, it is weird, but it was pretty beautiful, actually. And we have like the best fans in the world. We got lucky enough to go do that movie last year.
Right.
And it was like an excuse to get to hang out with people you love and do something you love. So that was kind of a treat.
Curious to know, Lyndon, because you have had such like recognizable roles and projects at so many different stages of your life. Like, what do you get recognized for the most, or do you kind of clock the different age groups are recognizing you for different things?
It's demographics.
Yeah.
If there's like a mid-30s guy, it's Mortal Kombat. And they're like, no way. Oh my God. And it'll be funny because it's like being on the set at Y&R. All these guys are like, you were in Mortal Kombat. They're like, oh my God, you're Johnny Cage. And then like crew guys, it's that demographic. If it's a demographic for Teen Wolf, there's demographic for Melrose Place. There's demographic for Wyatt Earp. There's, you know, it's like, it's, you kind of read the audience and you figure out who you're talking to, and you're like, got it. I know where this, yeah. And it is. I mean, I've been a successful working actor for a long time. And been just lucky, you know, lucky. Great life. Met great people, did really fun things, and hopefully made people a little happy along the way. And you know, recently I've been focusing a lot more on directing and have enjoyed that quite a bit. And I've done quite a few Lifetime movies at this point. And Susan and I usually do them together. We co-direct, but she's on this dumb show, so she can't can't get off. And so I've been doing them alone. But I got one coming out on the 25th.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, good timing. Yeah.
I know, called Nightmare Pageant Moms. I know, right?
What's it about?
We did one, Susan and I directed one, the first, called Nightmare Neighborhood Moms. And it was Lifetime Movie Network's number one movie of the year.
Awesome.
And so I got high hopes for Nightmare Pageant Moms.
So do we. Memorial Day, perfect timing. People kick back and watch it. Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of that dumb show, Young and the Restless, we kid, of course. How did you feel when you heard that they wanted you back? And did you ever think you would be returning to the show in light of how your story ended last time?
I never gave it much thought, I guess. And then Josh called last year to see if I wanted to do it. And I couldn't do it. I had Teen Wolf, and I had another movie, and then I had a movie direct, and it was a busy year, so I couldn't do it. And then he called and said, "Hey, can you do it now?" And I'm a bougie asshole, but I'm like, "Yes, I can, but I've got a surf trip that I've got planned, and I'm going."
That old surf trip again.
And so he goes, "Okay, look, we can fit it in here. You want to do it?" And I'm like, "Yeah. Let's do it." And so I came on and had a blast. I was really nervous because it's not like it used to be. You know, you're shooting 5 shows in 4 days, and it's just, are there fewer characters now? It's massive amounts of dialogue that I don't remember there being that much before. The couple of days I just had to kind of show up and like look menacing.
This is gonna be a breeze.
Yeah.
and then he started talking.
Yeah, then I started talking and killing things. And yeah, I love it because I talked to Josh and I'm like, "Hey man, let's write him bad. You know, I'm not looking for a redemptive story here. I'm not looking for to, you know, turn over a new leaf. I'm getting out of prison, 20 years, I'm coming back. And I got a few scores to settle and business to take care of." And so it is pretty much go, 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 hit the ground running. And it was great. You know, working with Sharon again was great. And working with Josh, he is so funny. And just seeing everybody. I mean, you get older and whatever, but there's a continuity, there's a permanence to a show that's been on for 50 years. There's a generational aspect to it, you know, grandmother, mother, you know, daughter, child, you know, it's people, and it's not just women, it's men. And it's been a part of their lives for so long. And it's been a family kind of touchstone. And it's that's really cool. And it's good to come back. And I'm like, "Sharon, you haven't changed at all. And Josh, he's still a kid." he is. He's so funny. And I wish they'd get more of that. Mm-hmm. You know, because he's such a likable, like a naturally likable person. And so yeah, I came back and just burning the town down. I mean, I guess we can't talk about what I did, but yeah, I'm not.
Suffice it to say, it's not coming from the goodness of his heart, whatever it may be.
No, it is, but he's insane. he feels absolutely motivated, or you know, and justified in what he's doing, and not about to back down for 1 second. Yeah, exactly. I think I might have done that face.
Well, I'm curious to know, because I feel we've heard from Susan that you were helpful to her in running lines and wrapping her mind around all her dialogue. Did she return the favor?
She absolutely returned the favor. And I think on my final day, maybe last couple days, and it was like, you know, 30-page monologue pretty much. And she wasn't even working, and she came and kind of hung and worked. And did, and she's a champ. You know, she, yes, beyond help. She guided me. She was like, yeah, you got it. And I'm like, okay, I guess so. Maybe, kinda, I don't know. I got something. Yeah.
Well, fans started to figure out that Cameron might be back in the mix when the champagne bottle was delivered. The champagne bottle, of course, harking back to the original storyline. So what does it mean to you that when this hint was dropped, the reaction on social media was huge? Because this really was something that fans wanted for a long time, to see this story sort of pick up again.
I know. And I talked to, you know, it's been a long time coming. Mm-hmm. And I love it that it's not like he's been in prison. And he got out, and it's, you don't get many. I mean, I guess Jeremy Stark was in prison, but he wasn't in prison for 20 years.
And we didn't know Jeremy before.
Right. And what I will say is, like, with Jeremy, there was a lot of like, this is his, you know, the mind games that he's playing, the, this is his part of his manipulation, his this, is that. There's none of that with me. I'm like, I'm going to kill somebody. I'm going to kill something. And I'm gonna start. There's no subtlety. it's like people are dropping dead, and things are dropping dead, and yeah.
I love the ease with which you can name drop Jeremy Stark because you've been running lines with your wife.
Yes,
very impressive. Absolutely. Very impressive.
I can tell you all about what goes on in the Abbott household.
How would you rate your Jack Abbott, Lyndon?
My Jack Abbott? What, like imitating Jack Abbott?
Well, when you're running lines with Susan.
Oh my God. Peter can do things that I can't do at all. There are lines that he delivers that I actually read the script and I'm like, oh, that poor bastard. I'm like, how will he deliver this? And then I watch and he does it. And I'm like, good on you, buddy. Because I would be just like, scratch, 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 scratch. I love Peter. I mean, he's a good person. He's a good man. He's I mean, what lame analogy. He's top shelf. But he is. He's a really good person and a nice man and a kind man and a talented man. And I'm so glad Susan's working with him.
I'm going to say you have something very important in common, which is you are both avowed Susan Walters fans.
Yes, totally, totally. I think Susan and I are both Peter fans.
As are we. But yes, what's it been like to just be at the set in general and such also a celebratory time for the show, probably still on the high of the 50th anniversary celebration, and now you're back?
It was really cool. And it was fun going to the 50th celebration. And I couldn't say anything about anything. But I knew I was going to work soon. I don't know. It's fun. And I'm kind of sad it's over. But you never, you know, who knows? But I, you know, it's like Josh wrote me a really nice note when I finished, and I wrote him a really nice note at back. And it was kind of like, I love you, bro. And I'm like, I love you too, man. Anytime, you just call me. I'll be there.
And that's Josh Griffith, not yes, Josh it, Morrow.
No, so Josh
people Morrow listening know which Josh.
No, Griffith. We don't. Josh Morrow and I don't write notes to each other. We just hug and whisper in each other's ears. talking about that, there was a little scuffle that we got in fighting me against Nick. That Josh Morrow is like freakishly strong. He's a solid piece of work. And I've got him wrapped up or whatever, and I'm on his shoulder, and he, you know, pops his shoulder up, and I put my tooth through my lip. I don't know if you can, well, they won't be able to see anyway, but that's a couple of weeks old. So it's finally healing up, but it's just like blood pouring out of my face. And he was just mortified. I'm like, don't worry, this happens.
Do enough in the name of art.
Right.
Well, Lyndon, I like, does it hit you somewhere in the heart that like you played such a bad guy, but that the fans do have kind of such a soft spot for him and actually really wanted to see you back on the show?
Well, I think it's, yes, of course it does. It's, It's he's a great character. And like I say, he genuinely loves Sharon. It's probably not the healthiest relationship in the world. But his love is genuine. I don't know. yeah. But it's funny because, you know, like this dialogue, you deliver it and you can find your, you know, Sharon would be like, I find myself like drawn in. And then I'm like, oh my God, this person's insane. But, you know, it's all making sense. It's going along. It's like, yeah, I'm in. I understand that. And then it's like, oh, no. Yeah. And it was fun to kind of like, you know, you hair and I just trimmed my beard all up when I finished, but it's Connor was like, dude, you look wild. He goes, you're on camera. He goes, you look like wild. but it worked, you know. I was like, I kind of have been just, I've been directing a lot, so I haven't been paying a whole lot of attention. And so I thought, no, this is probably really good for the character. Mm-hmm. And then Susan at one point, she goes, so I came home and she was doing her hair or something. And she goes, let me, what is it? Flat iron, a straightening iron. She goes, let me straighten your hair. And she did it. And cause the makeup or the hair lady had thought that might be a good thing. And I'm like, we're not doing that. We're not straightening my hair. This is weird. And then got home and did it. And Susan did it. And it's like, I might have should have done that. Because it was like Aryan Nation kind of just not a, it was a great look, but not one you want to roll around with. Here, I got it somewhere.
Now you have it in your arsenal for like your next role that might require some, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Bold size.
Oh, wow. Oh, no.
That's a scary person.
I'm running in the opposite direction from that person.
I do.
That was it. That's, and I went, this could have been great. yeah, but there was enough. There was plenty of menace with Cameron, and we always, okay, so between Connor and Josh and Sharon, it's like Kirsten, Cameron, Kirsten. I'm like, no, it's Kirsten. and then and Connor's like, really serious? And I'm like, yes, it's Kirsten, please. And he's like, and then Josh Griffith is like, no, it's not.
Fun practical joke. Well, we do look forward, of course, to seeing the Cameron story unfold, which is happening now. But also in some very happy real life news, we have to give you a mazel. You became a first time grandfather. So how that journey has been.
It's, you think you love your kids, and you do love your kids. Boy, grandkids are something special. And it's so cool to be, as I think as a parent, you're, you know, first of all, with the first one, you're like, why are they letting me go home with this? there should be like, you know, bumper rails. We don't know what we're doing with this baby. And then as a grandparent, you come in and you know what you're doing with babies. And it's like, really, you can enjoy, you're not tired. You can enjoy the process so much more. And you look into this little person's eyes and you see this, I don't know, a soul, a being, who's like looking around going like, where the hell am I? How did I get here? And they're amazing. We just, you know, we spent the weekend with them this last weekend, and Nora turned 9 months, and she's so funny and she's so sweet, and she's every second that you see them, they change and they learn, and they're learning how to work this body. They're like, okay, I don't know really what to do with this. They're learning to communicate, and they're learning to, it's great. It's beautiful. I mean, it's beautiful. It's just magical. And Grace and Jack are such good parents. And Susan is like, she's a great grandmother. She's what a grandma should be. It's yeah, no, thumbs up on Grandpa. I would say gifted. If you know, if you have kids, make them have babies.
Good tip. Pro tip.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
I love it. Oh my gosh. All right. Well, Lyndon, before we let you go, when you think back on, you know, your career, which I think it is fair to describe as both prolific and varied, how do you feel like the course of your career and life was influenced by the fact that you did cut your teeth on Loving and in the daytime world back in the early 80s?
I would think that initially after Loving, if I'm being brutally honest, I think that probably had a little PTSD. Joe Stewart was a lot. And so probably didn't do me any favors there, but there's also that thing of like, hey, if you live through this, you make it through this, you're going to be okay. I'm so thankful that I did daytime. I think it was profoundly influenced by doing daytime. I think the people that I met, the work ethic that you get, the memorization ability, everything. It was amazing. You know, it was amazing. And to come back to it now, you know, after all these years, I had more fun in the past month and a half than I had any right to. And I didn't think I was going to enjoy it at all. I thought that I watch how hard Susan works. And it is. Do you remember the old Dunkin' Donut commercial?
Time to make the donuts. We say it every week.
Exactly. And but that's what it feels like. You go, and it's so fast, this process. And you know, features or nighttime or whatever, you're like, all right, we shot The Master, we'll get it in coverage, da, 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 da. There's lots of coverage, lots of times to get, you know, to get it right. One shot on a soap, maybe two, three, you know, but if it's usable, they're moving on. It's fast and it's furious. And I was like, I'm not cut out for this. But I had a great time. I had a really great time. And you work with some of the nicest people in the world on that set and some of the most talented people. The crew is all amazing and the actors are all amazing and the directors are amazing. And it's this really kind, supporting place because it wouldn't last if it was toxic. It would come apart at the seams. It's too hard. What they do is too hard. And you go and you do your job. You know, it's like, God, and you make it through the day. And then it's like, okay, go home and learn tomorrow. And then you do tomorrow. Go home, learn the next day. Learn this week. Learn next week. And it's, you know, living with Susan when she's doing this, it's just... I was afraid doing it. And I'm like, she works so hard. And that's the thing. Everybody still cares. They care. They care that it's good. They care that it matters and that what they're doing is you can't just walk through it. You can't phone it in. And if you do, it shows. So I had a great time. I had a really good time.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what's ahead, especially from the delicious teas you've given us. But thank you so much for all your time today.
Yeah. Kill, 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 kidnap, kill. Yeah.
What's a little kidnapping and killing between
friends? You know, amongst friends, right?
That's right.
But exactly. It's done from a good place.
Isn't it always on soaps?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, thanks again, Lyndon. Have a great day, and we hope to talk to you soon.
Hey, I had a good time doing this too.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Lyndon Ashby for being our guest. If you like this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.